dissertation guidelines. We want to try to understand the main recommendations, principles that can be applied in writing a high quality dissertation for submission as part of your overall LLM degree. I have set out a number of key recommendations in this short dissertation guideline paper, and I've summarized all of those on the back page. It's not possible to design a perfect set of rules for all dissertations. Everything depends upon the circumstances, and there's a lot of flexibility in this. But what we can do is this: we can develop a series of general standards and guidelines that can help us produce a high quality piece of work. The key idea simply is this: be clear, be comprehensive. The core point is relevant detail. You're trying to incorporate as much relevant detail as you can in the space available. In an exam situation, when you're under time, you're trying to build in as much relevant detail within the time constraint. In a dissertation, you will have a word limit. So what you're again trying to do, it's the same idea, incorporate as much relevant detail in the space available. Be flexible, be intelligent, be simple, be original. Let's look at the basic structure. Essentially, what you're trying to do is this: you're going to prepare a high quality piece of work which you will present. You will have a word limit. The word limit in your case, I think, is 10,000 words. It used to be 15,000 words. It sounds like 10,000 words is easier. That's actually not correct. It's actually more difficult to write a higher quality piece of work in a shorter space. Because again, it goes back to this point about incorporation and about building in as much information as you can. What you're essentially doing is this: you're effectively going to write a 20,000 word piece and then squeeze that into 10,000 words. That's how you build in the maximum amount of relevant detail. That's what we're trying to do with this. Now, in terms of the basic structure, what we've got is we'll have an introduction, we'll have a development section, and then we will have a set of conclusions and a closing section. The introduction is to explain the background to what you're looking at. Try to always open up on a really good first sentence. Try to attract the reader's attention in that first line, that first sentence. And then again, at the very end of the paper, on the last sentence of your conclusions and your close, try to write a really good, high quality close. And what tends to happen with the close is this: you are looking forward. You are projecting into the future. You tend to close on some sort of like idea of what's going to happen in the future. Can we manage all of this before the next crisis? Ideas like that. So what you're trying to do is this: try to come up with a really good opening sentence to attract the reader's attention, and then have a very good, intelligent, articulate closing sentence at the very end, which looks forward and pulls everything together in a very neat, balanced manner. The purpose of the introduction is to explain the subject matter, the problem, and then to anticipate the solutions that you're going to come up with. We call this a thesis if it's a PhD. You do not need to write a separate thesis for a dissertation, although many students do, and you're perfectly entitled to do so, and you're welcome to do so. It's actually a very good way of organizing your ideas. It's not simply that you have a subject. You have a subject and a problem, and you're going to come up with a solution and reconciliation for that problem. That is your thesis. That is your argument. That's what you're trying to develop. What you will specifically do is this: you identify the subject matter, you identify the key theme or themes, and then a whole series of sub-themes around that. These subjects are very big very often, and even when you look at a particular more narrow area, it's always part of a larger subject field. So there's always going to be this sometimes quite difficult relationship between your core themes, your sub-themes, and other sub-sub-sub-themes. So try to organize those in advance. You don't need to have all this written up in the introduction as such, but try to create a note in such a way that you've got the clear subject matter, the key themes, any sub-themes, and any other sub-sub-themes, and to the extent that you can, build them into your introduction. What will then happen is, at the end of the introduction, you'll have a structural paragraph which basically explains the rest of the text. It will say something to the effect of: chapter 1 will consider this, chapter 2 reviews, explains the relevant law, chapter 3 considers the extent to which the law can deal with this specific problem that we've identified, a series of recommendations and conclusions are drawn in chapter 5. Something like that. So you have a structural chapter at the end. Just in terms of the number of chapters, generally, certainly for a 15,000 word dissertation, 5 chapters was a very good model size. You will have an introduction which is unnumbered. You then have chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 5 are your conclusions. So the introduction has no number, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1 provides this more background, historical, market, factual, quantitative information about the subject. What is it? How did it develop? What's its size? Things like that. Chapters 2 or 3 will either explain the problem or the law, one or the other. You can either do the problem or the facts in 2 and then the law in 3 or back to front. 4 applies the law to the problem and comes up with recommendations and solutions, and then chapter 5 will summarise and pull everything together again. So again, with a 10,000 word, as with a 15,000 words, 5 chapter structures tend to work very well. Now what will essentially happen is this: you will write roughly 300 words per page if it's typed up. So you can basically divide that in. So for a 10,000 words paper, you've essentially got 33 pages. You will have a 1-2 page introduction, you'll have a 1-2-3 page conclusion, and that will then leave either 30 or 28. So you divide that by 4, and then you can work out the size for each of the other chapters. What you can then do is this: by preparing a very good high quality contents outline, you can actually break it down so that you can work out for each part of the outline how many pages or part pages or part of a page, even if it's one paragraph or just a footnote, how it all fits, how it all comes together. And I would strongly encourage you to do that. Make sure that you've got an excellent first class outline that contains all of your ideas and works all of those out, including the relative sizes and parts of the paper, before you start writing. What very often happens is this: students start writing, they prepare a lot of draft material, they then try afterwards to try and stick it together, but that becomes very clumsy, becomes very disorganized, and very often they simply end up discarding large amounts of it. If you prepare a really good, high quality, structured outline from the beginning, it will help you. And what actually happens is that the actual writing up is very easy. Once you've done all the research and you've built all of that into the structure and the outline, the contents listing that you've prepared, you can write this up in maybe 1 week, 2 weeks. All the hard work is organising the ideas. So we've got the introduction, the contents, introduction, and then we're going to have a development section and then the conclusions. The purpose of the development section, as I've just explained, we'll have chapters 1, 2, 3, 4. One is more historical, background, factual, sort of market-based, size-based, quantitative information. Two will either be the problem, and then three, the law, or vice versa. It doesn't matter which way around. And then you apply the law to the problem. You come up with a series of identified issues in 4, and then you will resolve that, solve that, and come up with your recommendations for reform. And then you pull all of that together in your final conclusions. The conclusions themselves. Very often what will happen is students will write a high quality piece of work, but they then only have a couple of sentences by way of conclusions. It will say conclusions, but it might only be 2-3 sentences, possibly one very short paragraph. That is very disappointing for the reader, and it substantially undermines the overall quality of the piece. In a 10,000 word paper, you want at least a 1-page conclusion, if not 2-3 pages. And the longer, the better. What you're trying to do with the conclusions is this: you are reviewing the whole of your argument and the whole of your thesis. You go right back to the beginning, you paraphrase but summarise in a succinct, clear manner all of the things that you've been looking at: the law, the problem, the solution, recommend. And then, as I said before, you'll have a neat closing paragraph and closing sentence. So what you're trying to do is review everything again in a summary manner to pull everything together. Minimum 1 page if you can, if not 2-3 pages. If it turns out that you haven't completed all of your analysis and recommendations in 4. You can also build that into 5, and 5 will simply become a little longer. It doesn't matter which way, it depends upon the specific subject and the specific area that you're looking at and problem that you've identified to resolve. In terms of textual content, the key idea, as I explained before, is relevant detail. The more detail you incorporate, the higher a mark you will get at the end. So a lot of it actually comes down to simply technique and being able to incorporate as much detail as you can. In the dissertation, it looks very good to have headings and subheadings, and then within that, build up as much substantive content as you can. If necessary, you can have lists, you can have numbered lists of points, you could use tables, you can use diagrams. All of this is very good indeed and adds to the quality of the overall piece. You do not have to list things, you do not have to use tables or diagrams, but it looks very good indeed. A very good, high quality paper will have a lot of little tables in it, it will have lots of lists of key points and key issues, because that's a very useful way of summarising lots of key ideas in a short space of time. What we're trying to do is consider the relevant detail against the specific subject matter. So it will all depend upon what you're specifically looking at, but what we're trying to do is to get as much data, information, detail in the piece as possible. As we've said already, you're going to identify key themes and sub-themes. Try to do that in the introduction. You will then be picking up different themes, different parts of the discussion at different parts, but you'll have all of that clear in your structural outline, your contents listing, before you actually start writing, as we've said before. You need to balance descriptive and analytical content. You cannot analyze something until you've explained it. Students become very worried about this. A large part of the paper might seem quite descriptive, especially if you're building in a lot of detail. So maybe 40, 50, 60% is just description, just explaining things. Well, that's not a problem. You can't analyze it until you've explained it. So it's just getting an appropriate balance. Do not worry about that. So long as your analytical content is then good, it's not a problem at all. Students get very nervous about this word analysis. All analysis means is arguing something one way and then the other. So it's listing the advantages, disadvantages, the positive points, the negative points, the regressive points against the progressive points, and then coming up with a conclusion. There's more disadvantages to advantages, therefore, this is my conclusion. But once you've identified that, you then need to come up with your solution as well. So your analysis is assessing the problem, explaining the problem, examining it in further detail by examining each issue from a positive negative perspective, and then coming up with a conclusion on that, and then to the extent necessary, you'll then go on and further develop your recommendations and solutions. Very often what will happen is this: because you're applying the law to the facts or the law to the problem, there will be residual gaps. And these will come out either in chapters 2, 3, or more specifically 4. So that's what you're trying to look for. Are there gaps in this examination, this analysis, that I need to complete in some way? And then you'll make your own recommendations to deal with that. Try to develop originality insofar as you can. You get a lot of extra credit on originality. That might be in the structure and treatment of the themes or the sub-themes, or even the identification of the themes. The explanation and application of the facts of the problem, your application, explanations, presentation of the law, your analysis of the law to the extent to which it deals with the problem or those residual gaps, and then your overall final recommendations and conclusions. That's what you're trying to do. Do not focus on originality as such. What will tend to happen is that will come out naturally. If you've done a lot of good work, original research, if you're building a lot of materials together, the originality naturally comes out of all of that. But what you're then trying to do at the very end is this. You're trying to ensure that you've identified the problem, the extent to which the law can or cannot fix that problem, and then what further recommendations you think are necessary to correct that. That's with the key originality and the key quality of your study and the work product that you've produced will come out. And that will be very clear by the end of chapter 4 specifically, because that's what we're trying to do. You're applying the law to a problem, you're seeing to what extent it resolves it, are there any residual issues, and then to what extent can you develop recommendations and suggestions for reform to deal with that. When you're doing that, do not be worried about using other people's ideas. We have to be careful with plagiarism, and we'll come back and talk about that separately. But what you're trying to do is this. You can reuse a lot of other people's ideas. You're basically going to paraphrase and build them into your overall analysis. So you'll be using part of one writer for one point, part of another writer for another, or you'll be contrasting one with another. That's perfectly legitimate. That's not a problem at all. And even if you can't come up with your own completely new, separate, distinct, dedicated idea that no one's come up with before, you can still reuse other people's ideas in an original manner in the way that I've explained. What tends to read very well is this. You'll say that one writer explains this in this way and recommends this. Another one does this. You could do that in different paragraphs. One recommends this. One comments on this. One comments on that. That actually reads very well. All you then need to do is you'll have one footnote to source the idea. You're going to paraphrase the idea, but then build this into your overall analysis. And by doing that, you're adding all of your own originality to that, and you're making all of this yours so that it becomes a high quality, credible submission, good quality piece of work to get a good mark. On the footnotes themselves, you need to learn to use footnotes. Very often, students may never have used a footnote in their life, but at graduate level writing, we want to focus on that. We need that. So you're going to use footnotes initially to source ideas. Where did you get an idea from? To avoid any charge of plagiarism. Dissertations are all put through a Turnitin program, which will identify to the extent that you've copied words from anybody else. You can simply avoid that by paraphrasing. But still, you've got to be careful. If you've taken an idea from another paper, you should source it with a good footnote. Footnote you can also use to define all your key terms. You list all your primary sources. You list other secondary sources, such as journals, comments. You can also build in internet online sources. Very often what I'll do is this. There's an idea that is peripheral to the core theme, thesis, argument I'm trying to run, so I'll put that in the footnotes. I like to write in a way that reads fast. I want to present something quick, make it read fast so that the reader runs through it very quickly, gets from the beginning to the end and thinks, well, that was good. At the same time, there will always be lots of other points that are of interest, that are relevant, that I want to discuss, but I don't have time and space to do it in the text. I will therefore do that in the footnotes. So an interesting point will come up on, for example, we've already mentioned LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate, IBOR, replacing LIBOR, a lot of the problems that have arisen converting a lot of outstanding contracts into new IBORs. That's a nice point for a footnote. Or additional detail on some particular point or some particular issue. You can use footnotes for that. It's a very useful way of building additional discussion. Again, if there's a point that's made in another paper, so one author questions something or adds additional detail or creates a new perspective, you can build that all into your footnotes. You can build up a lot of high quality material in the footnotes without interfering with the general sort of running of your argument and presentation of your paper more generally. Again, in the footnotes, you build in as much original research as you can find. But be careful just on that. Everything you look at should go into your bibliography. You want as good a bibliography as possible, as substantial a bibliography as possible. What happens very often is students will present like a half page or even a quarter page bibliography. What that says to the examiner is, I was too lazy to go and do any extra work, and I've only used the most obvious, simple sources that you've already provided in the class. That's what that says. You want at least a one-page bibliography, if not longer. The bibliography doesn't count towards the word length, so the longer, the better. And in a really good, high-quality paper, the bibliography could be 10 pages, easily. 12 pages, easily. The point simply is this. you build into the bibliography anything that you've looked at. Even if it's not in the text, even if it's not in the footnotes, you still use it, you can still refer to it. Put it in your bibliography. And all you simply do is this, you start the bibliography right at the beginning when you do your contents and when you do your outline. You have a draft bibliography and a draft contents, and every time you look at something, you just build it into the bibliography, so you do it as you're going along. So therefore, when you get to the end, it's very easy indeed. Style, as we've said already, be professional, be clear, be simple, be direct, avoid unnecessary repetition, avoid conversational language. The best English is the shortest, simplest English. Write in a succinct, direct, immediate, clear manner. That is the best English. Students very often think they have to try to develop some type of highly literary, floral, artistic style, and they think that that adds quality to the paper. Very often it's the complete opposite. The best English is the simplest English. And so long as you've just done your work and you've presented this in an intelligent way, you will do very well indeed. Specifically, avoid unnecessary repetition. I personally do not even like to see the same word used twice in a sentence. You can always paraphrase. There's always a substitute word. There's always a better professional term that you can use. So avoid unnecessary repetition, and then avoid conversational language. Very often students think it's clever to try and build in something that they might write on in a text message or on a vlog, on a blog, or something elsewhere. They think it's clever, they think it's funny. It may or may not be when they had the idea and they wrote it the first time. Usually it looks, it takes away the quality of the piece later. Try to avoid any kind of conversational language. Usually it's unnecessary, and it just takes away from the overall value of the piece. In conclusion, you should be able to write on any subject. This is actually an exercise in many universities and even university admission processes. For example, All Souls College, Oxford, there's a specific examination, and it simply operates on the basis of you are given one word, just a word, and you have to write a whole paper on this word, and that's the basis for the determination of whether they appoint people or award. The key idea is simply that anything that we can identify, we should be able to prepare a fully structured, articulate, intelligent argument around. Anything that we can refer to, you could construct a complete argument around. If you respect the basic rules, you'll have no difficulty and you'll be able to produce a high quality piece of work. As I've mentioned, you are trying to incorporate originality. The more original, the higher a final mark you will get. Examiners want to know what your opinion is. In many parts of the world, in many teaching systems, you're essentially expected to learn by rote, which means simply memorizing and then representing that information back. Not at this level. What you're trying to do is to think, to develop, to analyze, to examine, to form your own opinions about things. We want to see that. You'll be rewarded for that. Do not be scared to present your opinion. This is your opportunity. Your own style will come out naturally. As I've said before, definitely do not try to develop a more literary or extended floral style. You just don't need that. But your own professional style will come out as you're doing this. This is an excellent exercise, especially if you haven't done it before, in training yourself to do this. This will help you for the rest of your career. And then just finally, enjoy this. It's actually very rewarding. Having a subject, having a problem, having an issue, and then solving it. You will very much enjoy this. I, in particular, very much like writing. I find this the most rewarding part of the work that we do, and I find helping students with their dissertations the most interesting and the best part of my own academic activities each year. I enjoy helping students with PhD work, and I enjoy helping students with the dissertations work. It's very interesting. It's very challenging, but it's very rewarding indeed. You will enjoy this. if you respect all of this, you will produce a very high quality piece of work, and this will very substantially raise your marks more generally across all of your subjects, which will make a very important contribution to your overall final grade, as well as, in my experience, this will also assist you professionally and academically, including in follow-up interviews. Very often what's happened is students will spend a lot of time talking about their dissertation in their next employment interviews, and in one particular case, the young man ended up working for one of the largest firms in London. He was sent back to his home country, in this case it was Italy, it was in Milan, and the senior partner liked his dissertation so much he sent it round the whole firm. And whenever any subject came up, any related transaction that was connected with this, the rest of the firm would involve him in that. Writing a dissertation will help you very substantially, both academically and professionally. You will enjoy this, and I'm sure you'll be able to produce a high quality piece of work.